This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, we have had a tumultuous spring. 50,000 educators descended upon the state capitol and actually got some change. There was a proposal for a 20% pay increase for teachers. They got 9 and a promise of 10 more to come. I know within their ranks there was some dissension. My observation is that's as close to a total victory as you get in politics. But it's clearly not over. But to me, the bigger question is, okay, there was a moment, there was a mass movement. The question is, does it sustain? And we are addressing that question today. We have four educators with us, two of whom are running for state legislature. But our first guest, Marisol Garcia, is a teacher. She's also the vice president of the AEA, Arizona Education Association. She was involved in the Red for Ed movement, which is the movement that was 50,000 strong at the state capitol. Beth Lewis is also with us here. She was involved in the earlier movement, Save Our Schools, which, despite everybody's all the pros' expectation, was able to successfully get an initiative on the ballot to a referendum, technically, to basically repeal the expansion of vouchers. And you have the difficult communicative challenge right now is, you've got a proposal out there, 305, and what you want people to do is to vote no, because it's not voting. It's not yes or no on what you want. It's yes or no on the original legislation that you objected. So if you're on the Save Our Schools, people want a no on 305.
Right. No new vouchers, no draining money from our schools, no on 305.
Okay. First question, and this is to Marisol and to Beth primarily, I think, and we'll bring our candidates in later. We'll save that as a we got to hold back something to keep people after the break. But okay, what evidence do we have that the movement is sustained? I know we have some people. Do you know how many educators are running for office and what kind of support are they getting?
So we have calculated about close to almost 20 new educators deciding to run for office.
Now, just quick interruption.
Yep.
Are any of them running against one another? I mean, are they potentially, could we, if they all won, could we have 20 legislators out of 90 that are educators?
Well, if you look at the fact we currently have legislators that were educators before becoming legislators, we could have 20 full.
Okay, okay. And now, are the 20 that are running, that includes several who are currently in the legislature?
No, that includes some that are all new.
That's 20 new?
Yeah.
And what's the current number of educators in the
Currently, it looks like there's about 10 that were former educators.
Okay.
In all levels, higher ed as well as K-12.
Okay, so that would include a college professor.
Right.
Okay,
right.
But people sympathetic to education, sir.
Clearly.
Okay. Yeah. So you're talking about we could potentially double or more.
That would be the hope, is to have people who are considering policy changes, legislation on classroom changes, have some experience within the classroom.
Okay. What kind of level of support?
I've seen nothing but this Red for Ed movement continue to grow past us coming back from being out of the walkout. Not only people deciding to get involved in the political process on a statewide level, but more importantly, on a local level. How can they make changes in their school boards? How can they advocate within their school district? And then, of course, we have our Invest in Ed initiative that we went out over the summer and collected signatures for, which kept people very much engaged in the movement.
Want to explain that one? Because it's very easy for somebody to get lost. We got Red for Ed, Invest for Ed, Save Our School. There's a whole lot of different organizations, sure. and they're somewhat different proposals. Invest in Ed is specifically a tax proposal.
Invest in Ed is a specific tax proposal on the top 1% on public on income tax that will pull in $670 million per year that would be voter protected.
And roughly speaking, what I believe it would do is add about 3.5% to the very, very,
very top.
Actually, to create a high, a bracket that doesn't exist for $250,000 plus or $500,000 plus for a family. Wouldn't touch anybody below that.
Correct.
So, Beth, your observations about level of activity out there.
I've definitely seen an awakening amongst my fellow teachers where teachers are asking, wait, what's an LD? Oh, what is my LD?
Legislative district.
Figuring out that number, looking it up, finding out who their legislators are, asking me and other people around them, well, do these people actually support education? Do they support public schools, district and charter? And asking all the right questions, then getting out, knocking on doors. The passion and the awakening is just growing by the day. I think as we're going back to school, we're seeing it grow exponentially. I know on our campaign, the grassroots organizing has really
Save Our Schools. That was that was sort of the mothership. That was the first. That was the initial.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of teachers have jumped on board because they've realized that, you know, part of the main root of the problem, the defunding of our public schools, has happened because of the ushering in of the school choice movement. And they've realized, oh, our public schools are being defrauded and defunded, and now they're pushing in private school vouchers. This doesn't make any sense. And so teachers are, you know, very angry about this, but it also inspires them to action. They want to protect the future of public education in our state.
The advocates of charter schools, I must say, have chosen a very attractive language. I mean, choice, I think most Americans hear the word choice, and that sounds like a good thing.
Well, in here in Arizona, we have a great amount of choice, and it's wonderful. Unfortunately, these vouchers are only going to help a 5% of families that choose private schools. These vouchers do not help charter school families. Mm-hmm. That's a common misconception. They do not help any of our public schools. We consider public schools to be district and charter. None of them will benefit from the voucher system. This goes to the well-off families that are already in private school, and then the few other people that might want to opt out and go to a private school and pay the enormous difference that would be required.
Can you explain for me, because this confuses me and I think it does a lot of people, within charter schools, are charter schools now all public schools or are they private or how are they different?
In the state of Arizona, which is very different than other states, all charters are publicly run. Some of them are for profit, and some of them are not for profit. So that's the key differentiator. But and that's where you see schools, you know, that are foreclosing and embezzling, et cetera. Those are usually the for profit charters that run on like more of a corporate model. Mm-hmm. But then we have some great charters that are not for profit that are running, you know, really huge amounts of choice and kind of like our magnet schools used to be.
Mm-hmm. They are a different. And I had a kid in a charter for a while, for a year or two, and they're run differently. They're released from some regulations. They're somewhat if I understand it correctly, the requirement of certified teachers is relaxed, I think. Is that correct?
In many, yeah. And the procurement policies are very different, which leads obviously to, you know, lack of accountability and fraud, et cetera, in some places. But the point is that, you know, our public schools are 95% of what our families choose. They're what need our funding. I mean, splitting hairs about district and charter is really probably not the best way forward. And it's not what this movement is about, whether it's Red for Ed or Save Our Schools. None of us are really getting into those hairs. We want our public schools funded.
That 95% figure, does that include charters or
mm-hmm.
Okay, so the 95% are in a public school,
right?
Some of which are charters.
Yes.
Is that correct? Okay, we will be back and we will meet two candidates, one Democrat, one Republican, who are running as current teachers for the Arizona State Legislature. We'll be back and continue this discussion in the think tank in just a moment.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we are back talking the politics of education in Arizona. In case you just joined us, the backstory, hardly a secret to most of us. There were 50,000 educators down at the legislature. Now, several of them, I think by count that we got in the last session, about 20 of them, are interested in going to the legislature in a different capacity. They want to be on the other side of the table as elected officials. We have two of those with us. The first is Jennifer Samuels. She's a teacher running for office in Legislative District 15, House. Interesting, I looked up your race. Your primary opponents are a prosecutor and the wife of a firefighter. And in this town, firefighters are potent political force that's now, of course, running in the House, you only have to come in second to,
yes, that's
to qualify.
Great.
And Christine Kelly, you are running in Legislative District 23 on the Republican side in what's basically Fountain Hills, Northeast Scottsdale.
That's correct.
You are faced now running for the Senate. You have two opponents, but there's only one nominee, one of whom, Michelle Ugenti-Rita, is an incumbent. I mean, she's a representative, but she's from that district, so she's a quasi-incumbent. She's
right. She termed out of the House, and she's running for it now.
And yes. That's a very common. That was the evasion of our term limits thing. You're allowed three terms. And
correct.
People who want to stick around switch from the House to the Senate and vice versa. I don't know if you're allowed to go back. I think, are you allowed to switch?
You are. You're allowed to go
so
back
and
forth.
So you can be forever as long as you go back and
you
forth.
You can.
Okay. That was kind of an oops in the thing. And the third candidate is Tim Jeffries, who was the DEA director who got fired by the governor.
Correct.
So let me start with you, Christine.
Sure.
Since I have you here. The question, one of them that I want to ask is the which may be, I ask you this because it may be tougher for on the Republican side, the Invest in Ed proposal. Are you in favor of it?
I am not in favor of Invest in Ed. I am definitely in favor of finding sustainable funding for education. Mm-hmm. I just believe as an educator, a small business owner, and a resident of Scottsdale, it would really hurt small businesses. So we definitely need to come together. We need to come to the table. We need to find sources for sustainable funding. But unfortunately, Invest in Ed for our district would really hurt us and would hurt the state.
And just so people haven't forgotten, because there's so many acronyms, Invest in Ed is the one that would tack a surcharge on more or less top 1%.
Correct. And it would hurt small
in
businesses.
The income level.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. I just believe everyone needs to take ownership. Everyone needs to take responsibility. We need to make sure everyone is invested, not just a certain portion of constituents.
Do you happen to know, it's been cited here that there's ballpark 20 new educators running for the legislature. Are you the only Republican?
I think I am.
I think you are. Well, you're in a rarefied position then.
I am. And I've been a lifelong Republican, but I'm also a mother and a teacher, and I'm very proud to be in this race because we don't have an educator and a small business owner representing our area. We have a lot of Republicans and independents that care about public education and want the best for their children. So I'm very excited to be in this race representing them.
And you are, I point out, your real race is in August. You are in a district that's 23% Republican, and the nomination is probably tantamount to election in that district.
Correct.
So
you're
really shooting for next month.
Correct. So. Yes.
Okay, Jennifer, you're kind of the opposite situation. You're LD15. You have opponents. It's interesting. In a primary for the honor of being a nominee in a district that is 20% Republican. So you have a double hurdle.
I sure do. And actually, it's really exciting to see that we have a Democratic primary in Legislative District 15.
Normally, any Democrat can walk in and have that nomination because it ain't worth much.
Well, actually, normally a Democrat doesn't even show up. Yep. We live in such a Republicanly held district that until now, Democrats haven't bothered showing up. It's just not possible. But I truly believe that education is the one issue that both parties can agree on. And so that's why I have jumped into this race. And my students are depending on a pro public education advocate to step up and speak for them.
And to what extent do you think the incumbents have, where have they been on that issue? Who would you be facing as incumbents?
So my incumbents in the general election would be House Majority Leader John Allen and Nancy Bartow, who used to be a senator, who is termed out and is now moving over to the House. And neither one of them have good records as far as public education goes. In fact, you'll remember about a year ago, John Allen is the boat guy. He's the legislator that said teachers have second jobs so they can afford boats. We know that couldn't be any further from the truth. And so they have a dismal record on public education, and we need someone who supports public education. So I have jumped into the race.
Okay. I want to get back to you, Christine. You know, looking back at the Red for Ed movement, and I'm asking you this as a Republican.
Sure.
When the teachers were down there, they saw a legislature that was pretty much divided along partisan lines. There were one or two Republicans who were sort of prepared to vote for more initially to vote for until 50,000 people arrived. There were, I mean, Kate Brophy McGee is sometimes an education vote on the Republican side. It's hard to find another one that's there.
You're absolutely correct. And
you would be a lonely voice, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Yes and no. I have had the ability as a small business owner, PTO president, teacher, to bring people together. I used to also be an assistant principal, and we need to bring people together. It's extremely important for the future of our state, for our students, for the workforce. I have that ability to bring people together. And as Jennifer said, we need to be able to work with both sides of the aisle, and we need to work together to solve this issue. And it's not a Republican issue. It's not a Democrat issue. It's an education issue. It affects and touches everyone's lives. And I believe we can work together to compromise. We have to be willing to compromise and work together on a solution.
And like Christina said, I think that an educator and a mom is uniquely qualified for that role of
Absolutely.
Compromise and reaching across the aisle. So I am very excited to see that there are so many teachers and moms running for office right now.
Well, there haven't been, for most of the folks who've been there, there haven't been a whole lot of instances of folks working much across the aisle. Down there, you know, they meet in caucuses and they don't, you know, Republicans don't take Democratic bills. And well, and frankly, I can't say the reverse because the Republicans have been in control for more or less everybody's historical memory. We'll be back. We'll pick up this discussion in the think tank when we return in just a minute.
Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
I have a piece here. We're continuing our discussion about education in Arizona, and I have an interesting piece that I ran across. It was written by a New York Times reporter that was not working for the Times at the time on the charter school movement. And starts off an interesting piece on Arizona. By the way, the reason I ran across this piece is that the author, Catherine Stewart, is the one who broke the case of Maria Butina, the Russian spy who got involved with the NRA and basically infiltrated kind of the religious right and the all that. And Catherine Stewart will be our guest next week on the think tank. Okay. So that is a little bit of a plug for that. But it's an article she wrote in 2017, and it starts out with a story of Phoenix, and I want to read that to you and have you react to it. At the Heritage Academy, a publicly funded charter school network in Arizona, according to a lawsuit filed in U.S. District Court, high school students are required to learn that the Anglo-Saxon population of the United States is descended from one of the lost tribes of Israel. They're asked to memorize a list of 28 principles of sound government, among which are that, quote, to protect man's rights, God has revealed certain principles of a divine law, the ninth principle, and that the husband and wife shall each have their specific rights appropriate to their role in life, their 26th principle. To complete the course, students are further required to teach these principles to at least five individuals outside of school and family. Publicly funded. That sent chills up my spine.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason that there's a national spotlight on Arizona when it comes to education. It's not just the defunding of our schools. Our lawmakers for 20 years have been writing the laws in such a way that schools receiving public taxpayer funds are not all held to the same level of accountability or transparency. So our normal district public schools, we take in every child who walks in through those doors. We provide every service we need to, whether it's for special needs students or any other service that's required, transportation, et cetera. It's not a level playing field when you've got schools like this, the Heritage Academy, or other schools that are picking and choosing students, promoting religious indoctrination.
And that was the point of this article. I went to a Catholic school for a chunk of my elementary education, and I have no problem with that. But they didn't get a nickel of public funding.
Right.
Nor should they have. Mm-hmm.
Correct. Right. If you want to teach religion, you need to be doing it in a private school setting, not in the public school setting.
and not take money
Correct.
Away from public schools to fund private what I mean this was I mean I ran that quote by a friend who was educated in Mao's China, and she said basically this there was a lot of similarities in the level of indoctrination.
Right. We have a Blaine Amendment in Arizona that rules it unconstitutional, right? We need to have a separation of church and state. So public funds should not be going to any school that promotes indoctrination. Actually, in 2009, vouchers were ruled unconstitutional in Arizona for that very reason. So that's why they've come back with this new workaround, the ESA voucher. Because it's public money that goes to a parent and then to the private school.
but it goes to a parent. But if I recall, the way you get isn't it some of the funding of that, you get a dollar for dollar deduction in a donation.
That's an STO voucher.
Okay,
another
that's
form of
okay,
voucher.
Right. That's it. In other words, if I'm supposed to pay an extra $1,000, I get it. If I write a $1,000 donation, I get $1,000 off of my taxes. Which is state funding at that point.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not really my money. That's money that I owed to the state to support everything that the state does. If I'm getting a dollar for dollar reduction, that is a state funded thing, and that contribution, that's a phony legal fiction.
And we know it's taking away from our students. It's taking away from the 95% of Arizona students who are attending public schools. And, you know, I have to say, as an Arizona native, this is shameful. What our education system has come to is embarrassing. 20 years ago, when I was a student here, our schools weren't run this way. And we were, you know, middle of the nation in a lot of different measures, teacher pay, per pupil funding, class sizes, all of that. Where our elected leaders have gone as far as education goes in the last two decades, it's just flat embarrassing.
I want to ask this of both Christine and Jennifer, because I presume you've been knocking on doors.
Correct.
What is the level of public understanding of these issues? You know, I think people, they do have a general sense where we're pro-education, but how much of what has happened and how much of the kinds of things we've been talking about here are widely understood in your experience?
As I've been knocking on the doors, it's been very, very hot, and I think people are extremely excited to see you, and they're impressed that you're willing to walk in this, you know, extreme heat. Mm-hmm. I think they're very excited. They're excited to see educators who step up and are willing to run for office. And I think they're really enthusiastic about our campaigns. I know that they're excited about my campaign in my district, and I've been given a lot of positive feedback and support. It's been great.
Absolutely. I would echo the same sentiments. You know, Red for Ed was, as Beth said, an awakening, not just for the teachers, but also for the whole community. So now, for the first time in a long time, people are watching and they're seeing what their elected leaders are doing. They're realizing that they're not actually doing the job they were elected to do, and that is to speak for the people. And so when I'm out knocking on doors, on average 500 per week right now in this crazy heat, as Christina said, they are so excited to see that there's dedicated teachers that are stepping up to advocate for their colleagues and for their students. It's wonderful.
In your case, you're a Democrat knocking on, I assume, mostly Republican doors.
So I have a Democratic primary. So right now I'm knocking on Democratic doors I can get through the primary and then Dem-leaning independent doors.
Okay. Fair point. I was going to ask you what kind of receptivity you're getting across party lines, but you do have a primary.
And we know that, you know, Democrats don't only live with Democrats. So in many households, there's a Democrat and a Republican living. And it's not necessarily only the Democrats that's going to answer that door I knock on. So I have had a lot of conversations with Republicans. Mm-hmm. I work with a lot of Republican colleagues. In fact, one dear friend of mine said a long time ago, hey, listen, if you run, I will support you. And so will all of my other Republican friends, because we need someone who's going to stand up for public education, regardless of what party we're affiliated with.
Were these educators or others?
Educators.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you all the issue of, you know, it's summer. That means when you knock on doors, it's hot, you're enduring. But one thing's going to happen in a couple of weeks, and that is you're all going back to school. And do you think that the level of engagement, on the other, on the one hand, there's a theory that says your level of engagement are going to go up because you're going to have actually more interaction. On the other hand, in the summer, people actually have more time. What do you expect? What indication do you have?
I'm seeing level of engagement at all-time high. I've been at advocating and organizing for dozens of years and in this state. And I am able to attend new teacher events and meet new teachers from across the state. And I'm going to tell you, people are just so excited to get involved at a local level, but more importantly, to get in front of the classroom and feel that they are not alone anymore, mm-hmm. which I think the movement allowed. I think it also exposed them to how policies work and how much they do impact their classrooms. Mm-hmm. For years, you'd hear teachers say, I don't want to be political. I don't want to get involved in politics. But I think as a social studies teacher, it was very important to me to remind them every single thing you do is being decided somewhere within the political spectrum. So when we saw folks spending the night down at the legislature, when we saw people walking out in tears, to me it was like they got exposed to a poli-sci 201 class. You know, they actually saw civics happening. And it was the most enthralling for me, the most exciting part of this entire movement is that people learned how civics works in real life.
That was one of my reactions to this. I watched this whole thing unfold and I said, civics will not be taught the same in Arizona for the next 20 years. As long as there's an institutional memory of what happened, you know, all those little dorky films about how a bill becomes a law and whatever, you know, it doesn't.
It's Glass Rock. It's the best film ever.
Yeah.
It does not describe the reality of. For example, strike all amendments,
right.
where you something goes through the process and then you take this bill that's been heard, wipe all the words off of it, put on an entirely different set of words on a different topic and say, oops, that's now coming up for a final vote because we give it the same number.
Right.
That the right people can circumvent the process completely or, frankly, pocket a bill and kill it.
Right.
And say, well, it goes to committee. And sometimes when it goes to committee, it goes there to die.
Right. And then we also saw folks who were just like, well, maybe the governor will veto it. And so we had to explain it would have never gotten to this point without that as never going to happen. He was mm-hmm. going to sign it. This was all work that's been done. And but however, the presence here will fundamentally change the way the legislature does mm-hmm. business, because for years there's been five, six of us upstairs watching. Mm-hmm. And now with the thousands of us who spent the night outside just waiting to hear what was happening, I think that people now will not. So walking in front of your kids on day one, meeting with parents, it's the memory is strong and we all have kind of scars from it. So I think that we'll be around for a while.
I do like to point out, by the way, it was in this studio that the governor one day in the spring said, we would really like to help, but we've only got 1%. And then it was again in this studio 48 hours later and said, well, we got 20% now.
We were political theater for a good 48 hours and then it flipped around and it was great.
That was the raw exercise of power.
That's right.
It's sort of like anything in a budget. Mm-hmm. Whether or not you have the money depends on how high a priority it
That's
is.
Right.
And what you did was you made education way, way higher a priority.
Right. I think every family, you look at your budget and you see what's important to you by just mm-hmm. looking at the budget. And for a long time, the budget was more focused on giving mm-hmm. people cuts and finding different ways to encourage people to come to the state and not necessarily educate the children that are currently here.
Okay, it's the whole profits over pupils notion, right?
Well, we will be back in just a moment. We've run over a little bit here. We have one remaining segment with a variety of educators, State Vice President of the AEA, and Beth Lewis from Save Our Schools, a smorgasbord of people who have been involved in education in Arizona at the intersection of our politics. We'll return in just a minute.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We are back, among other things, with two teachers who are running for office. Christina Kelly, now you are running in a district that has a lot of retirees in it.
Correct. I'm running LD23, which is mostly Scottsdale, Rio Verde, and Fountain Hills. And as a mom and as a teacher, of course, I care deeply about public education. But a lot of people don't have children. However,
and that's the question. Why should they care?
They absolutely should care, because a strong public education system is going to protect your safety in your neighborhood. It's going to protect your property values. It's going to affect you on every level. So everyone in the state should be worried and concerned about funding and supporting public ed. Public ed touches everyone, and it's important for everyone. We need to find sustainable funding for public education.
Okay. Jennifer, you know, you got some additional funding in this last legislature. What impact have you felt? What are you looking at for this upcoming year?
Yeah, so as a teacher and a mom, I am so very grateful that we got more funding this year through the presence of 75,000 teachers down at the Capitol. But we know we have such a long way to go. So I'm an eighth grade English teacher, and we are going back to school very, very soon. Our report day is Monday next week.
What school are you teaching?
I teach at Desert Shadows Middle School in the Paradise Valley School District. And just a couple days ago.
Oh, my condolences, middle school.
I know, right?
That's when the kids turn nasty.
They're fantastic. Oh, we love them. They're great. But I got my roster, and my first period next year has 37 students. And let me tell you, there is no way that anyone, no matter how highly dedicated or how motivated they are, they cannot reach all of those students. And so we know year after year, some of those students are slipping through the cracks. In an English class, that shows up in students that are reading behind grade level. And unless you have time that you can invest in individual learning, working one-on-one with those students, or even in small groups, you're not going to reach those students. So 37 students in a class, it's unacceptable. We have a long way to go.
And basically, the funding increase of this last spring was mostly targeted, while it was up to the districts, there was sort of a moral imperative to pour that into teacher salaries.
So, yeah.
That means that this really didn't impact class sizes at all.
No, not at all, nor did it impact any of the facilities repairs that we need to have happen. Look, we live in Phoenix, and we are going back to school very soon. It's still really hot outside. Every single August, when I go back to my classroom, I hope and pray and cross my fingers that my air conditioning works. And, you know, it doesn't always. And students can't learn in that kind of environment. And so we need to work at ways to fully restore the nearly $700 million of funds that we're missing from the pre-recession levels.
That answered my next question. I was going to ask Marisol mm-hmm. that question. $700 million is the level that it would take to restore us to 07, 08.
That's right. And I mean, if we go back to the initial five demands of the entire movement of AEU and where they came from, it not only dealt with salaries, which was
salaries kind of got the headlines
after
salaries
a while. The headlines, but I think additionally had to deal with our classified staff, which was another massive win for the Red for Ed movement, is just discussion about other people other than the direct instructor. So counselors, bus drivers, nurses, to talk about competitive wages for them, to deal with the fact that tax cuts continually affect our classrooms, and that's shown the priority, and then to have some sort of sustainable salary increase that is built in so that we can be competitive with just the surrounding states, not California, but the surrounding states directly touching the state, to make sure that teachers are staying. We have a mass exodus. Last year, beginning of the year, we had 1,800 positions open, and the certification requirements kept going down, 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 with this hope that, oh, we'll just let anyone teach. But I'm a mom, and I know how much it takes to be an instructor. I don't want anyone teaching my son. He will not be competitive in order to get into a great college and or to be a professional. So I think the demands were very clear, and so that's why the work has just started. One of the most impressive things I saw happen throughout the Red for Ed movement is, you know, the media was everywhere. They were talking to everyone. And the very common message of, we're doing this for our kids. It never veered to, I want to be able to buy something or I need something for me. Mm-hmm. It was always about our kids. And I think that that's what's so impressive about these people deciding to run for office, is because they have this unique paradigm of being in front of a classroom and fighting for hundreds, if not thousands, of kids. But more importantly, in their homes, ensuring that their families are taken care of.
I do remember one of the initial levels of blowback when this thing passed the legislature. They passed on additional monies to various school boards, to all the school boards. And there was a complaint. They said, well, that wasn't earmarked for salaries. And I thought about it. I said, you know what? It should, by ethically and morally, the way it was presented, be primarily that. But if you're in a school district, you're in a school and the air conditioner's out and there's no other money. A conservative government that believes in local mm-hmm. control, I don't see the problem with letting that decision being made. You know, if the school bus is broken, if there are some things that that can't make, you know, you want your money to be allocated rationally, and there may be individual needs in individual school that might circumvent every penny of that.
You know, I think the thing is there are so many individual needs. So not only do we need to fix the air conditionings and buy new textbooks and all of this and elevate our teacher salaries, all of these things are competing factors, and there's just not enough money to go around, which is why we need a sustainable funding source in order to restore those missing funds.
I asked Christina that. I want to ask you that, Jennifer, that your position on the specific proposal that's on the ballot.
The Invest in Ed?
Yes.
Yeah, so I fully support it. In fact, I was one of those teachers out at the ballpark mm-hmm. who was collecting signatures, or at the trailhead at 5 a.m. mm-hmm. collecting signatures, and I was very proud to do so. I differ from Christina in a little bit in that I think the top 1% for too long have not been paying their mm-hmm. fair share. And here's the deal. The tiny amount of extra money that they will now pay if this passes is so inconsequential to them, but it's a world of difference for my students.
I have seen the analysis of the state of Arizona taxation overall, not just income tax, but look at it all together. And we actually have a regressive tax system.
That's right. Absolutely.
We are one of the highest tax states in the country on poor people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And this is hard, and now this is not just made up numbers, but by the time you count sales taxes,
right.
which
mm-hmm.
hit the mm-hmm. poor the heaviest, even property taxes, I was surprised to see that, but I looked at the numbers, and actually property taxes on a percentage basis of income hit lower income people higher at a higher level, less so than sales taxes. And of course, income taxes, we have, if you look at those rates, those top rates are so flat. It's not quite a flat tax, but it's graduated, but it ain't graduated
yeah.
much.
So I fully support Invest in Ed, and I really, truly believe it comes down to everybody paying their fair share.
And can I just say, I agree with Jennifer the last part. Everyone needs to pay their fair share. That's why I think Invest in Ed would be hurtful, not just the top earners should pay. I think everyone needs to be invested. Everyone needs to get involved. And we do need to find sustainable funding, but in a different way. We don't want to hurt small businesses. We want small businesses to come to Arizona.
Okay. By virtue of the clock, you get the last word.
Sorry. Thank you
no
so much.
No problem. Christina Kelly running in LD23, Jennifer Samuels in 15, Beth Lewis, Save Our Schools Arizona, Marisol Garcia from the AEA. Thank you very much. We'll be back. See you next week.
Thank you, Mike.
And the Think Tank.